Easter is here and the Easter baskets are out.
They are, and they're filled to the brim with goodies from Marshalls Jen got at a fantastic price.
Oh, the Easter Bunny's outdone herself this year.
There's gourmet chocolate.
Plush toys.
Bunny ears.
Books.
Hold up. Bubbles?
We have bubbles.
We do. And I must say, the kids are loving these baskets.
How you feeling, Bobby?
Couldn't have said it better myself, Bobby.
Fabulous brands.
Feel good prices.
Every day at Marshalls.
Hey guys, it's Nick. Before we get going today, I wanted to give you a few discount codes for the products we love and our show sponsors. So don't just turn this one off. If you're listening to this podcast, we at Hardwick Life want to reward you for your loyalty. So take 25% off of your order by using the code HardwickFF25, because after this long, we consider you friends and family. That's HardwickFF25 at Hardwick.life. It's like Hardwick.com, but that one was taken by a shirt company. So Hardwick.life is where you can find it. For 20% off at BubsNaturals.com, use the code Hardwick20. That's Hardwick20 at BubsNaturals.com. And for 10% off at Julian Bakery, use the code Nick Hardwick. That's me at JulianBakery.com. Again, Nick Hardwick at JulianBakery.com. Now, if you want to hear what I take daily and get some insight as to what you should take, maybe stay tuned. If not, skip ahead about a minute and we will be into the show. Thank you all. All right. So you want to know what you should buy? I take 6 of our Hardwick Life products every day. I originally started that company out of kind of selfish needs. I wanted to get access to the absolute highest grade products in the world. Our supplements are pharmaceutical grade, all of them. They've got unique delivery mechanisms. So you aren't just getting expensive urine. You're actually absorbing the products at a higher rate than cheaper store-bought supplements. I take Brain, Joint, Fuel, Phyto, Pump, and Neuro. Now, that may be a little extreme for you, but those are my jams. Now, I've done a lot of damage to my body. I need all of them. The Brain and Joint, they're kind of self-explanatory, right? Fuel is one of the only whey protein powders that I can take that doesn't upset my tummy. And we hear the same thing quite frequently from folks that don't process dairy all that well. That's because it's made from New Zealand grass-fed whey. New Zealand has the highest dairy standards in the world. There's a noticeable difference, and the flavor, it's pretty damn incredible. For a peri-workout drink, which peri-workout, you'll hear that term, it means around your workout, or to add protein midday, I put 2 scoops of Fuel with Pump, which has 3 grams of creatine per serving, 400 milligrams of ATP, which is the body's energy currency, and 95 milligrams of caffeine to get you all fired up. All of those, they allow you to do more work in the gym, getting better results. More work equals better results. Who would have thought? Seriously, you can work harder and have a lower rate of perceived exertion. And I like to add in Phyto, which has all of the necessary nutrients, vitamins, and minerals, along with this patented formula called TrueBrock, which contains glucoraphanin, which researchers at MIT are calling the fountain of youth. And lastly, I take Neuro about an hour before bed. Dr. Andrew Huberman, a Stanford neuroscientist, host of the Huberman Lab podcast and recent guest with Joe Rogan. I'm sure some of you listen to that guy. He's pretty awesome. Recommended in our 3rd episode ever. We got him before he blew up. Magnesium L-threonate, as it's the only form of magnesium to cross the blood-brain barrier. And it increases levels of brain magnesium, and that leads to better cognition and a more robust memory. That's important. It also has a slight sedative effect to help you get to sleep. All right, I'm not going to bore you with more details. Get over Hardwick Life and use the code HardwickFF25 for 25% off. Now, you guys that have been following me for a while now know that I've used Bubs Naturals since the company's inception. I don't know. I may be their first ever ambassador. I know there's a lot of bigger names now that are promoting Bubs. The company has blown up and is thriving because many folks like me understand how great their product is. I take 2 scoops of their collagen protein and 1 scoop of the MCT oil powder daily with my morning coffee. Try it once, you're going to be hooked. It's unbelievably creamy. The collagen is also really a great way to sneak some protein into your kids' lives too. It's unflavored, so you can add it into pancakes, oatmeal, mac and cheese, or juice. And they're not going to notice a thing. Use the code HARDWICK20 for 20% off. Lastly, before we get to the show, I want to tell you about my friends at Julian Bakery. This company, they've really got their act together. I believe most people could use more protein in their lives. It's got a very positive effect on satiety, brain signaling, and maintaining a healthy body weight. I recommend 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. Please don't listen to Zac Efron's trainer, who on their show falsely ties too much protein to kidney failure and loss of bone density. And certainly don't go to the Game Changers propaganda documentary on Netflix for your science. Neither of these use actual science. There's a lot of kooks out there, folks. We're going to keep fighting the good fight. I love a variety of protein. Obviously, I've told you about our whey protein, Bubs Collagen Protein. And Julian Bakery's specialty, in my opinion, is their egg white protein powder. They come in ridiculous flavors like pumpkin pie, coconut, maple glaze donut. They blend easily. They're a great addition in the middle of the day. Use the code Nick Hardwick for 10% off. That's Nick Hardwick for 10% off. All right, that's enough. Let's get you back to the show. Love y'all. Okay, guys, welcome in. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Hardwick.life, like Hardwick.com, but .life on the back end of that. Foundational elements for a fulfilled life. We've got an exciting array of new performance products that complement our other pharmaceutical-grade supplement line that includes Brain Life, Gut Life, Joint Life, and Foundation Life. I take all of them on a daily basis, have been for years. They're incredible. You're going to love them. The new products include Build Life. It's an incredibly pure New Zealand grass-fed whey protein. Fuel Life, which is a small meal replacement that includes New Zealand grass-fed whey protein. Also, it's got fiber in there. It's got some MCT oil powder in there. It's got immunoglobulins. I mean, this thing is loaded. It is super delicious. And Pump Life, a pre-workout, pre-combat sport energy formula designed with cognition and neuroprotection in mind. It's got theanine, caffeine, creatine, and glutathione all in one convenient blend. I put a scoop of Pump in with either a Fuel or Build every single morning before I work out. I use the Fuel if I need a little bit more energy. It's got some carbohydrates in there. And I use the Build on other days to stop that muscle wasting that happens overnight. We can't wait for you to try them. And by the way, when you buy any of our products and you subscribe, you automatically save 20%. And speaking of subscriptions, I hope you've subscribed to our newsletter along with my Monday motivational football stories and mindset tricks that I use to keep going hard on a daily basis. Jamie's got some amazing recipes, family friendly, that they drop on Wednesdays. And our newest team member to Hardwick Life, Casey Thomas, he's a registered dietitian. He is dropping nutritional bombs every single Friday. He's the performance nutritionist for UCLA basketball. He's writing a weekly column for us along with answering your questions. He's even taken one-on-one clients. So get in touch with him. You need to subscribe to the newsletter that comes out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. There's really good stuff in there. He's a great guy, Casey is, with an incredible background, includes clinical research, expert peer reviewer for scientific articles, and he's a published author. You'll find that out when you read these. His emails, they are absolutely tremendous. They're funny, they're well-written, and they're easy to incorporate into his life. They're practical, science-backed advice. His latest article on the perils of eating at night, it changed the way I've approached my meals during the day to set me up for a great night of sleep and to not fall into some of the hazards that are associated with eating off of your chronotype. So you'll learn all about that cool stuff. Don't miss out on these masterclass type lessons. Sign up, hardwick.life. And another thing, one thing I put into my body since the company was founded in 2017 is Bubs Naturals collagen protein and MCT oil powder. One way or another, I have used Bubs religiously, daily. So has Jamie. I swear by it. I know you're going to love it. Lots of our listeners and friends have taken me up on the recommendation. I continue to get pictures of them using Bubs in one way or another. So awesome. Keep those coming. Their collagen blends effortlessly. I actually think you can tell how high quality their product is by simply putting a scoop in your coffee and watching this super cool cascading effect of dissolution takes place. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but that is something fun for me to watch in the mornings. And their MCT oil powder, it's so daggum creamy, guys. It's hard to beat. In the powder version, it's convenient to take on the road. It's never messy like the actual oil itself. And no other collagen brand can claim to be 100% NSF certified. They donate 10% to charity. How many companies can claim that? All right. Joining us today on the Finding Center podcast is Lenore Skenazy. Lenore is president of Let Grow. It's a nonprofit promoting childhood independence and resilience. And she's the founder of the Free Range Kids Movement. She's a speaker, blogger, syndicated columnist, author, and reality show host. Lenore became a household name when, as a mother living in Queens, she made the controversial decision to let her then 9-year-old son take the New York City subway home alone from Bloomingdale's. Became a national story and prompted massive media attention, as you could imagine. She became dubbed America's Worst Mom. In response, Lenore founded the book and blog Free Range Kids, How to Raise Safe, Self-Reliant Children Without Going Nuts with Worry, with the aim of fighting the belief that our children are in constant danger from creeps, kidnapping, germs, grades, flashers, frustration, failure, baby snatchers, bugs, bullies, men, sleepovers, and or the perils of a non-organic grape. That's right. Let Grow's quest is to make it easy, normal, and legal to give kids back some old-fashioned independence of thought and deed. They need to have their childhood. Lenore also hosts a podcast called Supervision Not Required. If you're interested in what you hear today, and I know you're going to be, go give her a listen too. She's got a great show with great guests. Let's welcome to the show Lenore Skenazy.
So great. I'll tell you who I am anyone, which is probably most people who don't have a clue. So I'm Lenore Skenazy. I founded the Free Range Kids Movement, and now I'm president of a nonprofit called Let Grow, not Let's Go, not right. Let Go, not Let, let It grow. Grow, not Let Grow. I mean, it is Let Grow. Sorry, it is.
It's Let Grow.
New word, grow. Right. And my whole goal here is to promote childhood independence. And I think that it's sort of gradually sort of leaked out of childhood. And now it's almost AWOL. And I want to bring it back because it's not only the part of childhood that we mostly appreciate the most as we grow up, but it's really a critical thing for kids to have to do some things on their own. So that they grow, you know, up proud and independent and capable and resourceful. And I think taking away the independence, as we've been doing for a couple of generations in the name of safety, isn't really safe at all.
And you have a podcast. So don't forget to mention the podcast.
Plug away. Thank you.
Yes, please.
The podcast is Supervision Not Required. But basically, if you go to letgrow.org, you'll find everything. And actually, yes. If you Google America's Worst Mom, weirdly enough, you'll find me for page after page after Google page. So now I've thoroughly confused. Just go to Let Grow. Let Grow.
Letgrow.org.
.org, yeah.
Okay, so you got pinned America's Worst Mom when you let your 9-year-old son at the time take the big bad New York subway home from Bloomingdale's by himself. Did you ever imagine that your life was going to turn into what it's become?
This weird thing? No. And as a newspaper columnist by trade, that was probably my 1,000th column. And I wish that all other 999 people had taken to heart and reread and talked about and discussed on a national basis, but that's the only one. The Why I Let My 9-Year-Old Ride the Subway Alone column changed so much because 2 days after it appeared, I was on the Today Show, MSNBC, Fox News, and NPR, now your show, discussing, you know, why would I let my kid do something on his own? And that really is what prompted me to start the Free Range Kids blog, which then grew into this.
Are you happy with what life's turned into after that?
I sometimes can't. There's that movie that I didn't watch, but it was called Sliding Doors or something like that. It's like one way, you know, the door closes on the subway before she meets the guy who's going to be her husband. And one way it's open and on he gets. And I really feel like that was my life. If I hadn't written that column, I would still be basically trying to get people to listen to me and having less success. So I've been really happy with this. And one of the most fun things has been just I was a daily newspaper reporter before this, right? I wrote for the Daily News and then the New York Sun. And so that meant a different story every day. And then suddenly, like Groundhog Day, not that my life is always like movies, but I got stuck on one story for the last 13 years. The 9-year-old is now 22. Yes. And it is, how did we get so afraid for our kids that we don't let them do anything that we loved doing and that we are grateful we got a chance to do? And that turns out to lead in a whole lot of directions, from, you know, thinking about anxiety and depression, thinking about the importance of free play and free time, trying to figure out why college students are falling apart, why depression is going up, you know, why kids are having a hard time on their jobs at ages 22, 25, 30, why sometimes parents are calling the employers on behalf of their kids. I mean, there's an enormous sea change in what it means to grow up. And I don't think I even realized how big a difference had happened until I started, you know, delving into this. And I can tell you, there are seventh graders I've met who haven't used a sharp knife, seventh graders who haven't walked the dog. Seventh graders are 12 and 13 years old. And people don't seem to understand, like, this is not just parents being careful. This is a society telling parents that their kids cannot handle a single thing finally capitulating to this fear culture and saying, okay, I guess I'll do everything for them. And that has just enormous implications from childhood on up through democracy.
Because you get chastised, you get cancel cultured, you get called the worst mom in America if you let your son do something that, you know, you make this decision. There was no doubt in your mind that he was going to make it home from Bloomingdale's to your house. And what did it take, an hour?
It has been 13 years. I think it took about an hour. Yeah, I mean, he had to go into the subway. I mean, he had been asking me and my husband if we would let him go someplace by himself, let him take him someplace he'd never been before and let him find his own way home on the subway, because he was very interested in the subway. And we're all on it all the time. And our older son had not asked us to do this, so we had to think about it. Our older son calls himself the control group. And wait, I can talk about him on another podcast. So we had to discuss, my husband and I, whether this made sense. And to us, it did, because we are on the subways all the time. There's safety in numbers. I deliberately chose where I would take him, which was Bloomingdale's, where we don't shop. Although, boy, have we given them a lot of publicity.
No kidding. Yeah, you're welcome. Yes.
Let's talk. It just seemed like a rational decision, sort of like in the suburbs, maybe in Indiana, you would let your kids ride their bikes.
Oh, yes.
And go to the library, yes, or go to the soccer game. And so it wasn't a crazy, heedless decision. I'm not a parent who doesn't care if my kids live or die. I'm a worried mom, believe it or not. I just, you know, I worry about you, your football playing. That's kind of scary to me. But I don't worry about strangers, and I don't worry about my kids having some wherewithal in the world. And that's what sort of set this whole thing in motion.
Yeah, and you didn't worry about his abilities at the time. What is, before I forget to ask, what is the 22?
Did I not worry? I trusted him. You know, you're worried no matter what your kids do. I mean, really, my kids are 22 and 24. I worry about them, ridiculously, but that doesn't mean I'm hovering.
You're still going to worry when they're 50 years old, I would imagine. It's just the nature of the beast, but you have to get out of your own way and allow them to blossom and to grow and to challenge and to push and to fail and to have all of these little setbacks. Before I forget to ask, what's the 22-year-old up to now?
I can only tell you part of it. Let's see. He's right now, he is studying for his commercial driver's license. He just passed the written part, and now he has to go start driving, you know, with an instructor in a giant truck. And did I tell you that the thing that scares me most is driving? So there you have it. They'll always figure out a way to drive you crazy.
Oh, that is awesome. You know, it's funny, you mentioned in Indiana, you said you probably let your kids ride their bikes around. So we moved at the very start of the quarantine from San Diego, where we lived in kind of the urban sector, like right outside of downtown. And it was very difficult for us to trust and allow them to go outside in the neighborhood. There's hills, there's cars going fast. And, you know, it was without us, we wouldn't really let them ride their bikes around the neighborhood. We moved to Indiana, and this was a huge kind of learning curve for us. We're in the far suburbs of Indianapolis, so about 40 minutes outside of the city, way north, surrounded by cornfields. And we're in this really nice neighborhood that's super safe and secluded, and the kids, when we first got here, they're bike riders, they're 6 and 8, and they said, hey, do you mind if we just go back to the park in the back of the neighborhood? It's about a mile away. can we go back there by ourselves and play? And we'll be home maybe in an hour or two. And they had like a little Fitbit at the time. And we said, yeah, sure. And they came back like 3 hours later. And of course, mom and I are sitting at home going, oh my goodness, this is terrifying. Like we go like, should we go check on them? And we just had to restrain ourselves. We ended up going to get one of those gizmo watches so they could call us or text us just to kind of let us know. But that quickly became our reality. Is it felt like old school Americana, and ET, they come home from school and they go, can we go call on our friends? Absolutely. Can we call on our friends? And they just mean, can we go knock on their door? And we have these kids running around everywhere. But I'll tell you, like, there were parents when we first got here that when we were out riding bikes together, my boys were 100 yards in front of me, and one of them was 100 yards in front of me, one was about 100 yards back, and some lady stopped in her car and she's like, is everything okay? And I was like, what do you mean, is everything okay? I was like,
one of the kidnappings is going super well, but the other one is lagging behind. But we do have two all of a sudden. This is great.
I laughed, and then part of me is like, I got mad. I'm like, you're commenting on my parenting. Like, I trust that my 8-year-old can ride up this hill by himself in our neighborhood, mind you, and everything's gonna be okay. But she stopped and just was so worried. But that's not the general consensus here. I guess, how did we get here? How did we go from a nation founded on people who got on boats that were, we wouldn't deem them seaworthy now. They came in, yeah. And here they are and everything's fine. And now all of a sudden we're just in our kids' way and we just can't let them go. And it's unbearable.
So I'll tell you, I wrote a book, you know, I wrote Free Range Kids, and in that I identified like four reasons, and I'll go through them quickly, but I do want to chew on two or three more that are newer and more interesting to me. But I'd say the basics are obviously one of the things that is scaring us to death is the media, because obviously the more eyeballs that any station or story gets, the more money they make, because they're delivering more people to the advertisers. And so, you know, when I was growing up, there wasn't that much media. Then along came cable. Then along came the internet. And there's such competition. I mean, there's worldwide competition at this point for our attention. And obviously, the stories that are the most salient or the most clickbaity are the ones that do the best. And there's no story that has ever done better than the story of a white middle class or upper middle class child in America kidnapped by a stranger. And so that's what you see. And if it's been 10 years since that happened, it'll be 10 years since Maddie McCann, or 10 years since, you know, Eitan Peetz was kidnapped in the 70s. And that became a story that people would repeat to me, a kidnapping in New York from 1979, when I let my kid ride the subway in 2000 and whatever, as if, why wasn't I thinking about that? So not only did the media bring us all these terrible stories from as far away as it could find, but it has encouraged us at the end of those stories. It's like, so parents, remember, always beware of where your kid is. And we were sort of exhorted to think of kidnapping as almost the natural consequence of letting our kids go. I don't know if you remember the milk carton kids. Do you remember pictures on sides of the milk cartons? And that's when a lot of today's parents were growing up. And so they'd be eating their Rice Krispies and looking at the picture of a kid that says, have you seen me? And it's like, no, but that could be me. And what I really hated about that entire ad campaign, which it was that in the vast majority of those cases, the kid was not kidnapped by a stranger, even though that's exactly where your mind was supposed to go. Mm-hmm. They were a runaway, or they were taken by a parent in a divorce case with a custody dispute. But when you grow up seeing all those, have you seen me? No, 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 no. You start feeling like it's almost inevitable that your kids are going to be kidnapped if you're not watching them all the time. And then that gradually sort of accreted into reality. I mean, not into reality, but into the whole culture believing that. And then we have a litigious culture. And so you start thinking like a lawyer, could this hurt them? Could that hurt them? Would I be sued? Could, you know, you just start looking at like swing sets in Richland, Washington, were outlawed from playgrounds because a kid had fallen and hurt themselves badly. But it's like, yes, just because something bad happens to some kid once somewhere, it became almost axiomatic that we worry about all kids in that same situation all the time, everywhere. And so you start thinking that nothing is safe enough. And then with the litigious culture, like in New Jersey last year or the year before, some parents had sued because their kid had fallen off a slide and broken her arm. And, you know, it's sad and I'm sorry that happened. Right. But it doesn't mean that slides are automatically lethal, you know, or these dangerous things we should get rid of all of a sudden. But in fact, the parents won their lawsuit and got like $160,000 or $170,000. I was about to say million, wasn't that? 100-something thousand dollars. And the reason was that their lawyer had convinced the jury or the judge that because it was on a 35 degree angle instead of a 30 degree angle, it constituted a grave danger. And once you have to start thinking like that, gee, is my slide on a 35 degree angle? Let me get out my, I don't know, protractor. I don't even know how you measure the angle of anything. You start thinking differently and you start seeing danger and risk as completely avoidable if you only do enough. And that sort of drives parents crazy. Third reason is that we live in an expert culture. Experts are always telling you you're doing it wrong. There's, you know, the cover of Parents Magazine will always be shouting at something at you that you didn't like. Did you realize that the laundry hamper, this is a real headline, is a huge danger? Now you know. Here, I'll tell you why. It was actually the number one danger in the 10 hidden dangers, their favorite 10 hidden dangers in your home. Can you guess why?
This isn't the laundry hamper that you could actually climb in from the second story and get stuck in as it went down to the basement, because my brother got stuck in one of those and we pushed him out. He's fine. He made it. But that was... How could the... Oh, he was probably seven. He was wild. That's what I say. Sorry, Matt, if you're out there listening. Yeah, we were over at my cousin's house, and they had this really cool in the closet, like in their den. It went down to the laundry room, and we thought it was super awesome. And he was just looking down there going, I can make it. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything where... No, he got out. He climbed out feet first, and then he ended up just working his... Charles Bronson. Yeah, Charles Bronson, just come through the top. You just... When Charles does it, he does it with a rope instead of...
No, that's not the laundry hamper. That's actually a laundry chute. So they weren't... You've given them a whole... That's a whole...
So I'm trying to think of, like, pitfalls of the laundry hamper. I can't think of any.
Well, that's why you're not writing for Parents Magazine. Really,
no job.
What a lucrative career that would be as a freelance writer. I speak as one. Laundry hamper, some of them are, they sort of look like those things, if you put it on the side, you can go through like a little tunnel for kids. They have some kind of tension wire in them, and their fabric around a wire that goes like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yep. So the problem, according to this article, is that the wire, you know, if the wire could come loose, and what would happen then? It would scrape your child's cornea like that. And I was thinking, like, yes, because kids are always standing by the hamper for hours on end waiting for something to happen, because hampers are so fun. That's all they can do is stand by the hamper. This is going to be fun. And then somehow the wire becomes loose and your child is right there at eye level, you know, not blinking at the moment. So their cornea is ripe for the slicing. I mean, you just have to really be kind of creative to come up with a new danger that hasn't been already told to you. Like, you know, don't have them stick stuff in the sockets. And of course, all the sockets are covered with those little, you know, fork-like things.
Yeah. Instead of just telling them that they shouldn't do that.
Right. So the expert culture starts making you worried that everything you're doing automatically or instinctively is wrong and you should be listening to somebody else. And then we have a marketplace, and the marketplace knows that people sometimes say, are Are parents less worried today or more worried today because they have small families and they used to have big families, so they didn't care if a couple died? And I said, I don't think that's how it worked. Oh, I got a couple, you know, like, I wonder which it'll be. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Who's going to die? I really don't care. It wasn't that. But I think that when we had bigger families and maybe one income earner instead of two, which is common now, you had less money per kid. And yes. Now that you have smaller families and often two breadwinners, there's more money that can be extracted by the marketplace for each kid. And so if the marketplace can make you worried that your child is going to have something terrible happen to them, and by terrible, I mean either kidnapped, raped, and eaten, or not get into Harvard, the two twin terrors of modern parents, then it can sell you something to, you know, it creates the fear, and then, woo, just happens to have the solution right there. So there are baby knee pads. Which are, as you might guess, for babies.
For crawling babies.
For crawling babies. Those engaging in that terrible, dangerous activity that no one has survived with their meniscus. And
we've been doing... that is just tragic. The one thing about having fewer kids to me, which may lend itself to this, is we do have more time and ability. As you hear parents say all the time, well, it goes from man defense to zone defense when you go from two to three if you've got two parents in the house. And I do know parents who have, that's how, yeah, it's man, yeah, exactly. I don't know what defense is, yeah. So, but the idea is, I guess the more kids you have, the less attention that you can pay to what every single one of them is doing. And maybe that's also lent itself to putting them under the microscope because we can.
Right. And, you know, you talk about more time, and in a way, I'm not sure if we suddenly have more time. I mean, women, a lot of women weren't working in the 70s, and there's certainly more women working today. Maybe not during COVID, but in general. And the statistics are that for college educated women from the 70s till now, whether you were working or not in the 70s till now, are spending, I think it's, I can't remember if it's 7.5 or 9 hours more a week on childcare than they were doing. And I think part of it, the reason is that part of it is just driving. There's so many more activities and parents are driving them everywhere. Yeah. But also there's this mandate to never stop hovering over your kid for all the reasons we were just describing. You know, they'll be kidnapped, or their cornea will be sliced open by the hamper, or you could be sued, or, you know, all slides are dangerous. So you better be, you know, waiting under the slide all the time for your kid to come down safely. Everything has been rewritten in terms of risk. And there's never, you know, the better safe than sorry idea implies that, like, they're either safe, you know, super safe because you're right there, or sorry, yeah, they're gone. You'll never see them again. And there's no idea that, like, well, maybe there's something safe about learning how to, you know, not to slide down the slide wrong, or maybe to, you know, look where you're crossing the street. Maybe there's something good and more safe about becoming self-sufficient. But that's never, you know, that's never part of the equation. The equation is only like, look, something bad would happen if you're not there, could happen if you're not there. So be there. So that's it. And
yeah, it's kind of that if it's to be, it's up to me philosophy, that we all think that we're just right. We're going to impose our own will on life, and all of our success is due to us. And it's funny, there's no element of fate or God or anything in it. Like, We're just going to do it all by ourselves, and we can, through 10,000 hour rule, here we are. And it's just, that's not the case. It's just not the case. Our lives are a twist of fate that happen all the time.
I'm so thrilled to hear you say this, because that is one of the things that I've been chewing on a lot lately, and that I was going to start talking about, but I think you summed it up, which is that, we really have been given the misconception that we can control it all. And certainly with the explosion of electronic devices, since, you know, in the last, I'd say 10 or 20 years, it feels like it. Because remember, did you read Harry Potter?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So remember the Marauder's Map? You know, that Ron and Harry get a hold of it, and it's amazing because you can look at it and you can see, look, there's Draco, and you can see who's at the candy shop. And it's this, It's this marvelous thing that J.K. Rowling invented out of her mind, and now it's your iPhone, right? I mean, right. It went from magic to, you know, parental gear in 10 years. And so now that we can see them all the time when we're not with them, and we can read their texts if we decide to, and the school is sending home every grade they got on every test, and some schools tell you what they ate for lunch, you have this feeling of, you actually do have something nearing omniscience. You're not omniscient completely, but there is, you can know so much more about your kid than you ever did before, including, did they get off the bus this morning? Did they walk in the school? I mean, all that stuff makes you feel like, well, I am in control because I know what they're doing and eating and wearing and seeing and doing on their grades. And with that omniscience, you know, used to come omnipotence, right? I mean, like, if you think about God, he knows everything that's going on and he can control it. Or if you think about fate, ha ha ha, you know, we're just going to make bad or good things happen. But if you feel it's all on you, that is an enormous pressure. And it is driving us parents crazy, because we think that anytime anything bad happens, it's because we weren't vigilant enough. And it's driving kids crazy because nobody wants to be micromanaged like that. I mean, imagine if your childhood with your friends, or even your brother, whatever he was doing, were watched every single time. I mean, you know, you wouldn't have that story to tell, right? You would say, there was that time my brother was about to get into the laundry chute, but luckily my mom was watching on her iPhone, and she came up and stopped it. Phew. You know, there'd be nothing happening, no scrapes that you had to get out of, because there's nothing interesting.
And
to the kids, the implication is that you're too dumb and too endangered to handle life, right? So you have to be watched all the time, or like a prisoner, you know, God forbid anything terrible could happen, I must be watching you like a prison guard.
There's also this thing, that the sense that I've been getting lately. So my son's playing football, he's in third grade, and he knows what dad did before, and I'm coaching his team. And at first I'm like, okay, this is great. I want to ensure that he's going to have a really positive experience doing this. And as we're working towards the end of the season now, I'm so ready for it to be over, because I don't like standing over him and knowing everything he's doing wrong and him looking at me and looking for corrections every time. And it's just this, I feel like it's created this awful space between us, and there's so much pressure, and he feels anxiety. And I've tried my best to just stay as hands off with him as I possibly can while helping him navigate some tricky situations. But it just feels, I don't know if I'll coach him again after this season. And I know a lot of parents like doing that and being involved and all that, but for me, I'm like, I think I'm robbing him in some strange way of the joy that he could be having naturally on his own, and giving him some type of anxiety and pressure about something that could otherwise be very fun for him. Do you find, and that's just like an example, but do you find parents that are hovering, that are always there, are creating anxiety for kids? I mean, I know kids that at 10 years old are on anti-anxiety medicine or antidepressants, and that's tragic to me.
You're hitting on a lot of things that I think about and have observed. But first of all, absolve yourself, because a coach does have to hover. So, that's your job, is to show, you know, like, coach, am I doing this right? No, your hand has to be here, whatever. So it's not like you're this crazy helicopter parent driving your kid nuts.
Gotcha.
But I'm going to.
Well, thank you for that.
No, I mean, what can you do? Yeah, you're the coach, you know, and your son has, it's like, you know, it's like I never wanted my mom along on field trips when I was a kid, because suddenly she would see who I was at school, which wasn't the same person as at home. So it's always embarrassing and a little weird and tense to have your parent around when you're with your peers. Simple as that.
That's true, and then the added pressure,
you're an NFL guy, you know, I mean, like, most people don't make it to the NFL who are, you know, third grade football players. And so there's that weird gap, but that's who you are, you know?
Yes, okay.
So that being said, you could certainly take a break. And if you miss it, then you go back and you know, shove aside whoever the other coach is, because you're the NFL guy in fifth grade. So I wouldn't worry about like losing your place, and see if it feels better. You know, that's one thing. But When you were in third grade, were you in a football league or whatever this thing?
I was in a football league. Yeah, third grade. But I loved sports always as a kid. I was in baseball, I was in soccer, I was in football, I was in basketball, I wrestled, I was on the swim. Every season that there was something to do, I was in at least one. We played hockey as kids all the way up till 10. So everything you could do, I did do. But I loved it and I asked for it. And I would ask my dad to drive me to everything. And so he was happy to get my energy out. It was just,
he was spending the extra 9 hours a week that the moms are right behind the wheel. So did you play when you weren't at a practice or an adult run thing? Like, did you ever just go off with a ball?
All the time. Yeah. So if I wasn't at practice, I was shooting baskets in my driveway, or I would throw a baseball against a brick wall, or my brother and I would go outside and play one-on-one tackle football. It was always something. I was never inside. Even when it was snowing outside, I was always outside.
Mm-hmm. And were there other kids besides your brother to play with? Like, could you ever organize a baseball game?
Oh yeah, we had neighborhood kids. We tackled each other all the time. We had kickball. We played baseball. I lived on a court. Yeah, kickball. Yeah, so we lived in a neighborhood a lot like the one we live now, and there was kids everywhere. So we could just knock on doors and go say hi.
And hey, can Joel come out and play?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And they always could.
Yeah. That's so great. So the thing that bums me out about today, and one of the things that Let Grow is working on, is that, you know, free play time when it was you organizing, you know, let's play kickball. No, that's too far. Let's make let's make third base here. No, that's stupid. I'm going to fall in the hole or whatever, yes. The longer hamper. That has disappeared. Yes. And a lot of, first of all, free time has disappeared. There was a study that I was just quoting, and it was the only one I could find, and it was from 2004, which is too bad because I'm sure it's gotten worse since then. The kids were already spending 7.5 hours more time per week on either school or homework than they had done 20 years ago. So than they had done in, I guess, 84. And that's not to mention all the time that is taken up by driving to activities and being in adult-led activities. And I've got nothing against adult-led activities, so long as there is ample time for non-adult led activities and time when, you know, you might be just practicing, your free throws, and I might be writing poems, but there's just whatever you're interested in, you find it and you do it for its own sake. And it's not for the trophy and it's not for a grade and it's not for your parents and it's not for a teacher. It's because it's something that you found that delights you and that fulfills you. And when you have that kind of time, you know, then it's not your son or any other kid looking up saying, am I doing it right? It's like, hey, look at this. Or have you tried this? Or this is boring. Let's do it only with our left hand. And all that kind of free play and getting along with other kids and making things happen and voting to change the rules is the basis of a lot of social emotional skills like creativity and communication and compromise, but also democracy, because you're voting to see, like, it's not the dictator, the coach saying, okay, these are the teams and you're bringing the snack and I'm killing you, mom, if she brings donuts instead of organic strawberries.
No sugar.
No sugar.
Yeah.
Life be like with no sugar.
No kidding. Yeah, no thanks.
So free play, I would say, like, you know, your kids can be in any kind of organized activity. Sounds like you desperately wanted to be on, you know, the teams or whatever. But just, you know, sometimes it seems like they just are taking over a lot more of kids' time than they used to do. I mean, it feels like there's practices now. I was just interviewing a girls' track coach who ended up getting out of the field because it was the parents were driving her crazy is what it mostly was. And the rules. I mean, she had to drive behind the kids as they jogged through the town, because the rule was that you always had to have a defibrillator within 1 minute of a child. And so, you know, it's like, maybe that sounded good to like the city council when they passed it, but they didn't think, like, you know, not everybody's playing a game at the, you know, at the court. Maybe they are driving, you know, going through town. Anyways, so when kids have free time, they are going to come up with creative, weird plays that you wouldn't have thought of. They're going to come up with new techniques that are going to serve them well when they're not doing, you know, when the game doesn't go exactly as planned. They're going to make some friendships that are very intense because they fought and then decided, you know, what the rules were going to be. And afterwards they were good buddies. Oh, and yeah. These are the things that can't happen when there are adults there organizing, separating the kids, solving the spats. And so one of the things that Let Grow, one of the main tenets of Let Grow is to please give kids some time for free, unstructured, unsupervised play. And whether that play is them writing in their rooms or them, you know, wrestling outside just for fun, or, you know, something really dumb like Mumbly Peg. Don't play Mumbly Peg. But, you know, just you have to give kids the trust that they will screw up, be frustrated, be annoyed, have a fight, and be okay.
Yes.
Because if they don't go through any of that, then you were talking about anxiety before. And if everything is like taboo or too scary or you can't handle it or let me handle that, honey, I'd be anxious too, because I would think that the world is very scary and dangerous and nobody can handle it except mom or dad. That's not fair to the kid.
Yeah. I think it's just a brilliant point thinking about free time, because I'm thinking about my own childhood and then my career. And then here's where a lot of former athletes really struggle, is in the transition after the career. And in the transition after the career, it does require creativity and it does require finding new interest and knowing what you like. Being a kid that was always involved in an organized sport or always going to some additional coaching or one-on-one session or whatever it was, when sport was removed from my life, I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what I was passionate about. I had no sense of, outside of sports and outside of lifting weights, I didn't know what to do. And I think a lot of other athletes struggle transitioning because they really honestly, without the sport, don't know who they are. And there's no identity there. And also, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking about my child too, who, when he's with other kids and when he's just playing, how much joy he has and how he can express that. And it does lend me to think, we're taking a season off. We're gonna take, you can get in an organized sport, but maybe after that we can just completely drop an organized sport and just have free time and just play and go call on the buddies in the back of the neighborhood who are available and who aren't driving around from sport to sport. And I find there's so much freedom in that, and I would imagine in their world, a lot of happiness.
It's most people's happiness when they think back on, you know, when they think back, and sometimes when I give a lecture, I say like, okay, think back on what you really love to do as a child. And they do. And sometimes I ask that you don't let your own kids do. And that's a whole big discussion. But sometimes I just ask, all right, think about, you know, what you love doing as a kid. Okay. And people remember. And I say, okay, raise your hand if your mom was with you. Not a lot of hands. Because really the joy of childhood, the joy of us is doing stuff that we love. There was something I wanted to say when you were talking about, you know, the joy on your kid's face. Peter Gray is a person I work with that I think you should interview. You'll love him.
Oh, perfect.
He's Thank Dr. You. Peter Gray. He's a professor of psychology emeritus at Boston College. He wrote the big, thick psychology textbook that they use in colleges across America. But he also wrote a book called Free to Learn. And a lot of his decades he's been spending on studying what it means, you know, how important free play is. And he's a delightful guy too. He's like a sparkly guy. And he's always been very athletic himself. And he says that a lot of after school activities, and I'm not just talking about sports, are school that just is not called school. We call it play, but there's an adult who's leading the activities and judging how you're doing and giving you, you know, not a grade, but, you know, your feedback or whatever. And, you know, some of us didn't love going to school. And imagine just like always having an adult always judging you, comparing you to other kids exactly your age. One of the things Peter really pushes for is mixed age play. because when there's kids playing together of different ages, it's a completely different ball game because, you know, you can have you're not going to throw the ball as hard to the 6-year-old if you're 12 as you'll throw to another 12-year-old, right? So you're learning actually almost unconsciously a little bit of empathy and a little bit of leadership because you're not being an asshole, right? And meantime, the 6-year-old who might with another 6-year-old, or 6 is too old, or let's say a 4-year-old playing with another 4-year-old, you know, I want to be the daddy. I want to be the daddy. And then there's like, there's a lot of crying or there's tantrum. You're not going to do that when you're around the very cool 8-year-olds, you know, the people who like the giants in third grade who you want to be like. And so you start holding yourself together for a bunch of reasons. One is you just don't want to be embarrassed, but really what you want to do is keep the play going. And what Peter has pointed out is like in an example that he uses sometimes, which is why I'm glad. One time we were both lecturing at a conference and I was like, oh my God, all my examples are from his book. And he's sitting there, what am I gonna say? He's gonna know I steal all his material. But here's one of his examples, which is that two girls playing in kindergarten and one of them they both wanna be the mom, but one of them agrees to be the baby, which is a drag. So already you're getting a little bit of self-control, like, okay, I'll do that so that we can change later. But then the mom, ow, bangs her hand and is she going to cry like a baby or is she going to hold herself together to keep the play going? And there's so much that kids are willing to deal with and absorb to stay having fun. Fun is such a high that they automatically start shifting their behavior. Even bullies end up acting less horrible because they don't want nobody to play with them. I mean, so when you take free play out of kids' lives and replace it with I'm making the teams and like the bully and the jerk are all have to play, they're not getting any of this feedback that you get in play. Like you're so bored, like maybe you're bored of this anecdote. I should be watching you and seeing like, should I shush already? Because otherwise he's not gonna play with me. So there's so much going on when kids are playing. And I'll tell you, Penny Wilson, who's this lady in England who studies play, calls fun the orgasm of play. And what she means by that is that kids are willing to do almost anything to keep it going because the payoff is so great. And she actually says that, you know, Mother Nature put it in there for the same reason as the other one, because, you know, as much as we need to procreate, we need to find somebody to procreate with. We need to be able to get along in society to become a successful adult. And so she made play. It's difficult. It's confusing. It's frustrating. You don't get your way. You lose. People want to do boring things. You don't get to be the captain, but you're willing to keep adjusting because of the goal, because of the payoff. And so to always have adults running something, it's not play. It is an activity that kids are learning and it can be good for them and they can love it. But it's a very, very different thing from just having your kids off in the field behind the house goofing around.
And having a great time. So I know there's a lot of parents and you're like a living model of what parents would want for kids. It's like,
I don't ever want to be the living model. I want to be the,
but like,
research this, but I don't, you know, I don't even think.
But your life, right? So you go to Yale, you go to Columbia, and a lot of parents are like aspiring to do that. And I think that's part of, and you talked about one of the great pillars of what we're striving for is like, if my kid doesn't get into Harvard, we're not a success.
Get into Harvard, by the way. That was like the worst thing in my life. I went to Yale reluctantly. Now it can be told.
But we're probably, I would imagine, by this hovering lawnmower, helicopter, whatever you want to call it, parenting, snowplower, whatever it is, like, get out of the way, my kid's going to Harvard. We're probably, and I know David Epstein is one of your podcast guests.
I say, have you done David Epstein on your
show? I did.
Oh, weird, here, 1 second, I'm fixing my...
Yeah, David was one of the first guests that we had, and he is just so wonderful. And isn't he just so fascinating in the science that goes into it? And for people out there, go check out mine and check out Lenore's. And it's just fascinating it's a book that I have on my shelf. It's one of my top five all times. I just for me, it just answers a lot of questions and gives great guidance. And I think what it also allows is just the ability to not have a mapped, perfectly roadmap plan to where you're going in life. It doesn't work.
There's the old expression, man plans, God laughs. So, you know, plan as much as you want. I mean, his big point is that we all think we can raise a Tiger Woods, right? We just put a club in the kid's hand and beat him with it until, no, not beat him with it, but, you know, direct him in what to do and he'll grow up and he'll be this great champion. And first of all, there's only one Tiger Woods, but most of all, you know, golf is something where there's always a ball in front of you and you play by yourself, you know, you're not playing in a team. And so it's just, it's so straightforward. And most things in life aren't that way. You know, most things like you love your job and then you get a new boss and the boss is horrible. And what are you going to do? Or, you know, so your girlfriend dumps you or just, I mean, not only the bad stuff, good, weird opportunities come your way. You write a column and suddenly you're on TV. You got to be able to pivot and improvise.
Yes.
And, you know, the best exercise for that, he says, is just doing a lot of different things. Like you mentioned at the top of the show that you didn't just play football as a kid. You were playing every single sport as the season came along and then more sports just with your friends, whatever, I'm assuming whatever they felt like playing on any given day.
That's right.
And to have the power of analogy in your head to go like, well, this reminds me of a thing in football, except we do it this way in hockey. Or not even sports, just to have the power of like, we used to do it this way when I was an engineer, and now that I'm working at the newspaper, let's try it this way. It's having this like X-ray vision into other parts of life that can help you do whatever you're doing now. So
making those lateral,
I'm your kid is a fool's errand.
Because you get the ability, if you have a wide swath of knowledge to pull from, to make lateral connections that would have otherwise never have been made, pulling from individual silos and then making them into their own creative one.
I just have to refer to another book for one second, which is the book Moonwalking with Einstein, which is about memory.
Cool.
And the thing that he points out that you were just pointing out with your talking about analogies is that the word inventory has the word invent in it, because originally when this word came about, and it was before, I think possibly before writing, you had to have all these ideas, you had to have a big inventory in your head of ideas and experiences before you could start tumbling them around and inventing something. So you need the inventory to invent, and that's all. Thought that was cool.
That's beautiful. Where I'm sure you have your own particular parenting hangups or have when the kids were younger that you had to get over and probably do so but I bet this whole process challenged you to think about the things that you were maybe restricting your kids from.
I mean, like we had to throw the kid right back on the subway. It's like, oh my God, everybody's watching. You have to take the subway, Izzy. Why, Mom? Just get on it. Can you pick me up? No. So I'll tell you, like, but as I said, the subways don't scare me. New York City doesn't scare me. People don't scare me. Cars scare me. And I told you that my son is learning how to truck drive. I mean, I'll never get over that. You know, what can I do? It's something that worries me. Am I going to say, you, honey, you're 22. You can't drive a truck. Can't say that.
What were the steps for you in getting over those little hurdles? Or do you just deal with it? And how did you process it all? And I guess where could other people that are maybe a little too involved, how can they start to take steps back?
Right. First of all, I just want to clarify the idea that people think I'm the anti-helicopter mom. And of course, I'm part helicopter on my own mom's side. But so I'm not against helicopter parenting. I'm against a culture that has made it seem normal to worry all the time about your child living or dying when they're doing the simplest things. And, you know, I once was in a fifth grade classroom in a suburb, and I asked the kids, how many of you have ridden your bike on your block? And everybody raised their hand. And I say, how many of you have ridden a bike around the corner? And the hands went down. And so I don't think that it was because each individual parent was a harping helicopter snowplow jerk. It's a society that has made all those parents of that age think that having their kid ride their bike around a block is too dangerous to even contemplate. So when it happens to a whole culture, it's not that the individual parents are helicoptering. It's that you have Parents Magazine saying, watch out for the hamper in your house. And you have people suing because their kid fell off a slide. And you have no kids for your child to play with at the park because everybody is in an organized sport, because that's the only safe and reliable thing, because you can't possibly send your kid to the park by themselves. Right. So it's a societal problem, I would say. And so it needs a sort of shift in the norms. The norms have shifted from letting your kids, you know, go knocking on the doors, Joel home to play, to I'm going to drive you there. And sometimes I've even heard from parents who have let their kids walk over to a friend's house, and the friend's parents have walked the kid home at the end of the play date because I just was so worried. So it's always reinforced this idea that, like, if you're not constantly worried that your kid is going to live or die, there's something yes. wrong with you. I actually think that's why people were down on me when I let my kid ride the subway. It was, I used to think it was like they were afraid of the subway. And in the end, I started thinking that they were mad at me for not going to the dark place first, for not being so afraid.
That you didn't think the way that they thought.
Right. And actually all the, at the beginning, and by the beginning, I mean the first 4 years, whenever I was asked, you know, why did you let your kid go? And I said, he wanted to, we thought he was ready. Often the rejoinder was, but how would you have felt if he didn't come home? Or if he never came home? And I was always, I never had a good answer. It's like, I got that other son at home. Remember the control group. I didn't have a good answer. And it took me literally the 4 years to realize that it wasn't a question. It was an accusation. They knew how I would feel. So why are they asking that? They're asking that because they want to, two things. They want to chide me for not thinking that way, because that's the way you're supposed to think now. And also news, you know, you read a romance novel and you know that the mousy secretary at the end is going to take off her glasses and, you know, va-va-voom, marry the, you know, the CEO or the prince or the duke or whatever. Good. And if you read a mystery, you know, Miss Marple is going to figure it out at the end. It's not like, well, I guess we'll never solve that one. Too bad, you know? And similarly, the news has a particular story that it knows sells. And we were talking about this at the beginning, you know, a child kidnapped by a stranger. My kid wasn't kidnapped by a stranger, so they had to twist it into, but what if he had been? So it gets back into the box of us thinking about, well, you should never let your kid go because even though he didn't die, what if he had? So that's what I want to say, first of all, is that parents, I empathize with you. I'm one with you, and I don't blame anybody for being scared in a society that has decided to think of all children as in danger all the time, doing all right. The things that we did as kids. So that being said, Let Grow has two school initiatives. Everything we do is free, so it's not like I'm pushing something like, oh, I can't wait to get my $5 rebate or whatever on this. Two school initiatives that are really, we've been showing them to actually change the local culture where they happen. One of them is what we were talking about before, and it was Peter Gray's idea. Let's open the schools in the morning or after school for free play. Whether you're in a safe neighborhood or a dangerous neighborhood, there's some place that is safe, which is school.
Yes.
And you have an adult there in case, you know, like with the EpiPen, you know, and a tourniquet in case of something terrible, but they don't organize the games. They don't solve the spats. They're just there in case of an emergency, like a lifeguard at the pool. And then the kid, and then you put out a lot of junk for them to play with and stuff. Like, so there's balls and there's jump ropes, but there's also old suitcases, there's cardboard boxes. And so they come up with something to do. And it is as close as you're going to come to the free play of your childhood or mine that you can get that parents will accept, because it's a particular place and there's an adult there, but otherwise the kids do what they want. And all the social emotional stuff that we were talking about before of learning, like, you know, will you play with me? No, you always hog the scissors or whatever. All that stuff, not in a ball game with the scissors. I was thinking of the.
Right. Don't run with scissors.
Right. Don't do that. Anyways, but all those interactions then occur, and it's like, this is a castle. No, it's not a castle. It's a fort. Okay, well, I'm going to be the king. No, I'm going to be the king. All that stuff happens, and it's great for kids, and it's almost free in that all you have to do is have some junk and, you know, a couple of adults or an adult watching. And so that's one thing. We call it the Let Grow Play Club. And you know, we have an explanation of how to start one and a little pledge that parents can sign saying, "Let I know my child is not going to be happy every single day and every single second, and that's okay by me." And kids saying that I won't leave the premises without asking, and I will solve my own arguments with my friends. And they sign these things, and then you have free play back in kids' lives. So that's one of our initiatives, school initiatives. And we also have, you can also do it in your neighborhood and create a Let Grow play club in your neighborhood. But the other thing we have is the Let Grow Project, which is even simpler, which is that teachers give kids this homework assignment that says, go home and do something on your own without an adult. And the kid comes home and says, "Look at mom, I have to do something on my own without you or dad or anybody." And it's like, and the parent who has been not letting the kid ride around the corner, not letting them walk to the store, mm-hmm. not letting them wait at the bus stop, is forced to do it because it's homework and they trust the school and they trust the teacher. And then once the kid does it, they actually end up trusting the kid, but it requires this push. And that's we've right. seen it over and over again. It is such a profound and miraculous change in parents that you can't believe it. You cannot believe that something this simple has such a big effect on the parents. And it is so great for everyone. And because it's the school, there's a bunch of kids either in the class or the school or the district all doing it. So you're not the crazy parent letting the kid wait at the bus stop or walk and get an ice cream. Everybody's doing it. And so you're absolved a little bit of the shaky guilt and you know you have to do it. And then the kid is like, "Well, I guess I have to do it." And they're talking to their friends, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And then they start comparing notes. "You got to go all the way to the drugstore. How can I get?" So, not to the drugs, the drugstore. And yeah. So it changes neighborhoods. And we heard from a principal who said that she was driving home 2 weeks after the kids had done the project, and she saw kids outside again on their bikes and skateboard and roller skates, who rides roller skates? And she hadn't seen that in 17 years of her being wow. a principal at the elementary awesome. School. We had a neighborhood where the kids were finally allowed to trick or treat by themselves because they were going with the parents and it was downtown and everybody was shivering and cold. And one of the moms said, "Can't we just let them do it by themselves?" And the other mom said, "Yeah, Let Grow." And they went and had coffee or whatever, and the kids went out and trick-or-treated. So it's changing, it's not just giving parents permission to do that, it's giving them a push. And Let Grow was founded on the idea that people change their minds after changing their behaviors far more often than they change their behaviors after changing their minds. So if somebody yeah. is pushing you to say it's safe, it's good, and you must let them go, that changes the whole equation. So we really encourage parents to have their schools do this. I know school is crazy right now, and some is in person and some is not in person. You can either do it through the school with the Let Grow project, or we have a Let Grow independence kit, which is basically you doing it on your own at home, and that some teachers are using during COVID just to get parents more used to the idea of, okay, you're starting to let them bake, now let them make you dinner. You're starting to let them play outside, now let them go, you know, a neighborhood over. So it's just reintroducing a norm that was just normal a generation yes. or two ago, which is taking your eyes off your kids, not feeling terrified. And the more you do it, the better you feel. And the kids feel so much better too. And I don't know how to even show people this, but we have a video of these seventh graders talking about how anxious they were before the Let Grow project. And it was off the charts. I mean, there were kids who were afraid to, you know, climb a tree, walk the dog, whatever. And afterwards they felt so much freer and better, and so did their parents, that I believe that someday independence is going to be therapy, or maybe it's just going to be like PE class, but it's going to be reintroduced, however artificially, into kids' lives, because having taken it out, it was like taking out an essential vitamin that we thought didn't matter. It was like white bread instead of wheat bread, and now we got to reintroduce it. And so Let Grow is devoted to making it normal again to give these kids some independence.
I love it. And the only way to build confidence is by doing. And from both the parents and from the child's perspective, you have to. And I love the push, and I love the assignment that you give the kid, and you send him home so the parent can go, "Okay, however reluctant I may be, go ahead and ride your bike around the block and go to the," yeah, I love that. I absolutely love it. I love the work you're doing. It's letgrow.org. Lenore, tell everybody how they can follow you. How can they learn more?
Well, I think you just told them. letgrow.org is our website. And we have a Facebook page, Let Grow. We have one that's called also No More Helicopter Parents, which I know I just said I don't get down on helicopter parents. We did it for search engine reasons. And that's where people can, you know, just say like, oh, I can't get my 7-year-old off the couch. I'd love her to be playing outside, but I can't get her to go. Or questions like you had, you know, should I be coaching or should I stand back? I mean, it's where a dialogue goes on. And then perfect. I'm very active on Twitter, which I would say people should avoid Twitter.
I know. That's a horrible place. Twitter's a horrible place.
It used to be so fun. It was so fun. And actually, you know, people are still very funny, but it is, you just sort of have to skip over anything that looks political because it gets to be so rancorous.
Oh man, is it just the worst? I thought the sports world was bad. Oh goodness gracious, the political world is, whew, it's too much. It's too much. Lenore, I learned so much. I'm going to take a lot from this, incorporate it into my own life. I know our listeners are going to as well. And thank you for the great advice you gave me personally. So,
well, thank you for elevating, you know, you know, people wonder like, how is Izzy the 9-year-old? He was so excited that I was going to be on with you. And oh my God, he's like, oh my God, he's with the Chargers. Oh my God, look at this. So, you know, thanks for the prestige you've given me. Appreciate it.
Right on. Give you a little clout in your own house.
Exactly. Could use it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Lenore. Keep it up.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Easter is here and the Easter baskets are out.
They are, and they're filled to the brim with goodies from Marshall's Jen got at a fantastic price.
Oh, the Easter bunny's outdone herself this year.
There's gourmet chocolate.
Plush toys.
Bunny ears.
Books.
Hold up. Bubbles?
We have bubbles.
We do. And I must say, the kids are loving these baskets.
How you feeling, Bobby?
Couldn't have said it better myself, Bobby.
Fabulous brands.
Feel good prices. Every day at Marshall's.